Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Ellen Wadey, and my guest tonight is the poet Cynthia Cruz. Cynthia Cruz was born in Germany and raised in Northern California. She holds degrees from Mills College and Sarah Lawrence College. Her poems have appeared in the Paris Review, Grand Street, Bellevue Literary Review, Black Warrior Review, and are anthologized in Isn't It Romantic? 100 Love Poems by Younger Poets, and the Iowa Anthology of New American Poetries. She is the recipient of several residencies to Yaddo and the McDowell Colony. She lives in New York City. She will be reading this evening from her collection, Ruin, published by Alice James Books. Hi, Cindy. Welcome to Prosody.
Thank you.
How about we start off tonight with you reading some poems?
Okay. This is the first poem in the book. It's called January. January, a California of snow and the surprise of illness. I throned myself in the white noise of its silence and watched as the world fell away. All the silver flickerings of possibility going out like the sound of horse hooves clicking into the distance. It is almost the end of the world. Anesthesia of medicine and me beneath its warm bell of milk. My girlhood was microscopic, a locked window overlooking the sea. An atlas of the disaster, an unlit hall, and a shift in the waves of the field. Blue bedside porcelain. Michelle, my little sister, silent as a weed. I took all the things I loved and smashed them one by one. Self-portrait in horsehair wig. In the next life, in an absinthe slip of ribbons, water silk coat, glass seeds like water at the throat, I'll be adored by a kneeling army of boys. In a blue blood summer, you'll be criminal, Clyde-like, dark-eyed, and timid. Your face will be a brilliant countenance. There will be no dour consequence to our secret meeting. In the evening, we will be astonishing as ever in perfect dress. In the room of hard-pasted porcelain and water clocks, you'll press your slender fingers at the hinge, discover a hidden winter trapped in a snuff box. The Kingdom. We three girls in the kingdom at the end, our hands grasping out to mother, exquisite in her mandarin coat and lace-stitched satin pajamas. Every afternoon, a myriad of allergy tests. Seaweed green glass bottles filled with sleep, small black tablets, and the poking of needles up and down our backs. The Report on Horses 1. Then the final season of my brother's last visit. His long dark hair in his face and shirt sleeves concealing his thin white arms. Like a girl, he was always trading in what little he owned of his life. Already he was too fragile for the world. In my mind, I have been hiding among the ruinous thistle of last winter. Fox, my girlhood horse, wasting away in the barn, her weak limbs at rest along the tremendous dark of her body. The Report on Horses, too. Then I was back at the old house, my brother still alive. The two of us racing through the yellow sagebrush, dust rising from the earth like mother's drunk words, spies in the hallway, shadows in the orchard. Billy's hand in mine, leading me into the wood. A boy's beginning as if for the first time. Come on, he said, let's find something still alive left to kill.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Ellen Wadey, and my guest tonight is the poet Cynthia Cruz, reading from her collection Ruin, which was published by Alice James Books. Rigoberto Gonzalez did a review of your book in the El Paso Times, and he drew a rather, somewhat intimidating historical line between you and Sylvia Plath. And I have to say, that's a nice line. It's a nice thing to have somebody do for you. But I was just wondering how you feel about that in the sense of, you know, I think when people think about Plath's work, it's like, oh, great, now I'm going to go on that bookshelf. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering kind of what you think about that.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure because I think that the whole Sylvia Plath problem is so complex. I couldn't begin to discuss it. I think, I don't know why, but I think that she's hated very much. And I think she was when she was published as well. I think a female poet, at least, isn't really allowed as far as I know in this country, I don't know other countries, to be angry and not be called crazy. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting too, I'm talking about the negative parts, but that if you are a woman and you write about anger or violence, then you are put into that, onto that shelf. And I think that's the danger. I think that she's a really great poet, and I think people forget that. I think maybe the thing to think about is, what is it that made him compare our writings? Because he did compare the writing and not, for right. example, the life or things right. like that.
Well, and that's, you know, that's, thanks for the segue. You led me right into my next question. I think for me, at least, and I know I'm not as much of a student of Plath's work as poets are, and I'm sure you know her work by being a poet, that there's a certain, I would say, almost indirectness that she uses, and I'm not sure I'm going to articulate this very well, but for example, death is a fairly prevalent theme in your book, but I don't think that you're writing about death directly. You're not writing about the incident of it necessarily. I don't think, you know, this is just my interpretation, I don't think you're writing about fear of it. And in fact, I was really struck in this book how little fear there is, though the world that's constructed is kind of a dangerous and intense world, but there's not really fear there. And so it seems like you're almost writing about the shadows around something like an issue like death that kind of help form it, not the direct thing, but the indirect thing. And I think, you know, for me at least, and what I've read of Plath's work, sure, there's a lot of anger and a lot of, you know, very direct emotions in there. But I also think she's writing a lot about kind of the environments around situations. And for me, you know, I don't know, maybe that's my two cents worth, but that's what I thought he was talking about in drawing the comparisons. So I was just wondering if you could talk just a little bit about, as you're, you know, that kind of creating the environment around the issue in your writing, do you think about it that way, or is that just kind of the way it comes to you?
Yeah, it's just the way it comes. I think the other thing is sort of mythologizing, creating another sort of universe or kingdom. I think that's what she does. And I think one thing we were talking earlier about is that people, when I've read at different places, people tend to ask me things like, one person actually said, how could you possibly write something like this about your family? You know, and this was actually another writer asking me this. And I said, you know, that what I know about writing, and especially about poetry, is that we write in metaphors and similes. And I don't really understand why, I mean, for example, I never had a horse. You know, maybe I shouldn't say that, but I never did. And I don't think it really matters that it represents something else. And so I guess for me, it is all about creating the shadows or creating a mythology or a parallel universe to the literal one. Because, you know, the thing that I used to say when I used to teach is I could write a poem about my mother getting hit by a car, for example, not that I wish it upon her or whatever, but and that would be very sad, and people say that's very sad. Or I could write about, you know, like a horse being shot, which is in a way even sadder because it represents so much. And I think that's what I try to do in my writing. The problem, and this goes back to the Plath problem, is that people take it literally, and I don't know why people do that with poetry. I think I would be saved if I were more quote-unquote experimental. You know, then nobody would read narrative into it. But now I'm going off on a tangent.
No, that's a good tangent. And I think, you know, I think that's a problem that writers who are writing into a place, what I would describe as vulnerability, or a place of, you know, I don't want to necessarily use darkness because then it has all those connotations with it. But I do think readers come to it and think, maybe because we spend so much of our lives trying to hide our own dirty laundry kind of thing. It's like, well, how could you just put it out there like
right,
that?
Right, right.
But it's like, no, I'm writing a story or I'm writing a poem. It doesn't mean that this is my particular dirty laundry right here. It means I'm just exploring conditions, human conditions, ideas, those kind of things.
Right.
Yeah. How about you read a little bit more for us?
Okay. So I'm going to read a poem called Toby. Toby, spent boyhood in a 10x10 cabin. Cornelian box with wings flapping. Bird blood blathering. Inside, terror, a fire igniting and never not lit. He got the gun cocked. He got his hand on my pretty humming box, a live machine set forth for purring. Toby 2. Spray paint, wheat paste, homemade skateboard. California suburbs are the slums of the future. What isn't taken by the cops is co-opted for endless banks of black television sets. And the LA sun is junk white. Vegas hot, it burns the cinder block of the strip mall parking lot. Someone's mother's pickup's parked with a glue-sniffing family of kids inside, and everyone is dead in my America. Through the night softly. Woke on the highway, thin in my dead brother's clothes, I was gone but still dreaming. A desert city strobing in the distance like sex. In sparks, I traded in what little I owned for a .22 caliber handgun. Drunk on second all in the sun, I let the poisonous helmet Christian me. Contrary to rumor and hearsay, I am not dead yet. What I recall most of that overdose is the gorgeous white underworld galloping into me. Door to Heaven 2. Already the dream tigers have arrived, striped and enormous as always. When you vanish into the maze of silver cypress, let the mallow white ink take the quiet of your mind. Let the river kill the blossom. He who hurt you once shall now be put to rest. I will find him, I will waste him in my own sweet way. If I can, I will become you. January 5th, 1973. Brother is harvesting my dreams again, his skinny trailer park body delicate and terrible as a girl's. Murderous, bloody-nosed brother, it was you who made me, and I don't blame you. You took what was given and did what any brother would. Hollywood Boulevard, sniffing paint from a plastic bag, I wake, dreaming on my knees again. Sparks, Nevada. In the middle of the night, Father brought me a falcon. By morning, it ripped the wire and flew the hill into the highway. When they found me in that car, my sleeve stemmed in blood. I didn't know what it was I was trying to kill. I saw a craft of orphans streaming down the river. They were dressed in white and silent as a seance. It was then I spoke to the bird. Already God is shaking his black seed back into me.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Ellen Wadey, and my guest tonight is the poet Cynthia Cruz, reading from her collection Ruin, published by Alice James Books. I want to talk a little bit about the images and the kind of conversation about gender that goes on in your work. You know, there's lost sons, there's girls that look like boys. There seems to be a certain girl stepping into an empty space where boys have been before. I'm just, it's very subtle, but it's recurrent. So I just wanted to ask you to talk about it a little bit.
That's really great. I don't think most people have noticed that. You know, what I can say is I was in therapy and I was talking to my therapist and I didn't know why. I said, I don't know why I keep writing about myself as if I'm a boy. And that's especially true for, I guess, maybe half of these poems and especially the second book I am working on. And after some thinking, I realized that my brother and I were best friends when I was 11 and he was probably 13. And I was a tomboy at the time. And I didn't see really any difference. I mean, obviously, I knew he was a boy and I was a girl. But I did the same things he would, like catch snakes and things like that. And at that time, there was sort of a series of events that separated us. And we've been separate ever since. And I think in some way, you know, sort of in the back of my consciousness, you know, we were, I'm not sure. I mean, this is great because I'm having to verbalize this. But we were sort of one in a way. And I think I also replay, you know, if I were my brother, what would have happened? What would it have been like? Mm-hmm. So I'm not exactly sure if that answers.
Yeah, I think it does. And it's, you know, I find it particularly an interesting conversation at kind of this point. There've been different things, conversations I've been involved in, kind of, you know, feminism at this point, and what does it mean to be a woman at this point? And so much of the conversation has been directed about, you know, women trying to do what men do or men trying to do what women do. And I find there's a fluidity in a next level in this kind of conversation that you're having. It's not about the gender so much as this sense of, it's about space in a way in your book. It's about these empty spaces, and that sometimes a girl stepping in where a boy was or acting as a son. And I thought it was really an interesting, different take on it. Kind of going back to our conversation earlier, I wanted to talk about Gonzalez. I'll go back to his interview or review of your book. He described your book as elliptical. Mm-hmm. And there is, as I read the book, there are a number of images that kind of come up repeatedly throughout the book. And not so much as decoding the images, I started thinking of him as a poet who, you know, I know poets are so particular about choosing their words and the images that they use. And, you know, those are your kind of brick and mortar. And so I'm not looking to play like Password or do some kind of personality test, but I just wanted to bring up a couple of those images just to, you know, kind of, you were talking before about metaphors, like how this is an interesting metaphor. One of them is winter. There's a lot of winter in your book. Why that metaphor? What does winter do in terms of your work?
I think it's sort of a contrast because I grew up in California, so winter wasn't really winter. It's not cold there. So I think that, I mean, it really is just sort of metaphoric. And of course, I think of it as white, so it's a sort of cold.
Okay. We can whip through some of these. The listeners can't see it, but you're wrinkling your brow right now as if, why is she giving me this test? It's not meant to be a test. It's just... St. Francis, he comes up a couple times.
Oh, well, I love St. Francis. He loves the animals, and he's, I mean, he's just, he had to be in there because, okay. Well, I have to keep talking about him.
Yeah, please do.
There's this one story about how there was St. Francis and the wolf. So there was a wolf who was terrorizing this village.
I don't know the story.
He was terrorizing this village, and all the villagers were going to kill this wolf because he was taking all their food. And so St. Francis, of course, being this cool dude, he got the wolf and the people together, and he basically had them strike a deal. Like, if they were nice to the wolf would be nice. And I also imagine him as, you know, St. Francis is respected, and I think people take him seriously, but he used to talk to animals, and I mean, I think he did. So he's just sort of this magical, almost like guardian angel sort of character in the book, I think.
Yeah. And definitely... you treat him more reverentially than making him like a Dr. Doolittle. field. There's a lot of fields and kind of wide open spaces, which I want to come back to, you know, in conversation. Well, let's bring it up now. The speaker in the poems a number of times is in the fields, but the fields to me feel as if they're pressing in, that they're actually... They're not wide open spaces. They're spaces of containment. So, and that's a landscape that keeps coming up over and over again in the poems. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I think there is the field, you know, I grew up in California where there were these sort of tall catweed kind of fields. But I think also the field is a place to sort of put the character to start all over again in a way. It's sort of what you were talking about, the gender thing, you know, that you can take the character, put her or him in this place, and sort of restart, I think.
Yeah, and there's sort also, but I'll is. Say, there's a certain amount of hunting that goes on in this book, too. Mm-hmm. There's kind of direct images of hunting. There's a poem with bloodhounds in it. There's the falcon. You read the falcon shows up a couple times. You read one of those. Mm-hmm. And then there's these indirect images of hiding in the weeds. I think that's why, you know, the fields, again, it's interesting because it's how you pull together some of the themes, I guess I should use more appropriately since this is a literary show instead of things, that you're talking about death and, you know, there's this idea of hunting and fields, but there's not fear in there. You know, I kind of come back to that again. It's I guess that's why I was talking before about kind of writing in the shadows of what shapes something. Because I think if you were in the actual moment of hunting or death or any of those things, you know, how could you not include fear in it? And this is almost like an outline of it, a step back from it. So there's a lot of image, you know, the images of fields and weeds. So I guess the question I am asking has to do with the landscape mm-hmm. in your work? I know some of it comes from your knowledge of being from California and in the kind of landscape you grew up in. But I think it also goes back to what you were talking before about a mythology. So mm-hmm. did you have a landscape in mind as you were writing? Did it just develop as you were writing? Like, what does environment mean in your work?
I mean, I think that, so the literal would be, yeah, I mean, where I grew up, there were hawks and there were rattlesnakes and there were fields and rabbits and neighbors with BB guns and things like that. But I think also that a lot of the fields, and even in the house a few times, they're sort of crouching in the shadows or trying to hide, I think, and that's where it works. And I think that there may a few times be references to police coming, I'm not sure, but there's, it's sort of that kind of thing that you're going to be found out and taken away or, and, but I also think it's interesting to change the subject about the writing being without fear, mm-hmm. because when I think of, I mean, I feel like in some ways it's my voice, but my voice sort of as a child or my voice, you know, with the mythology of being a child. And I think that maybe, you know, the voice is simply in the moment. And so in the moment, you're crouching and you're not necessarily, I don't know if that makes any sense. I mean, you are afraid, but you have adrenaline and you're just getting away. And I think there's a lot of that in the book. And I think it's interesting because I've had people call my book sort of terrifying and things like that. I never get it. I think, well, there's ponies and stuff. but I think people are terrified by some of the images.
I think the images and just, you know, your poems take us to a place that's very intense. And I think intensity sometimes can just cause a reaction of fear to people. You know, it's completely concentrated. It's, you don't get to run away from it. You have to look mm-hmm. right at it. Mm-hmm. So with that, how about you read some more poems?
Okay. Through the Night Softly 2. Silver Steamboat Brother. Broken trailer wasting on the blossoming dogwood. Towy in the burning cotton. What the men done is the cavalry come is a murderous gallop of horses. Under the trestle I watch the thorn bleed, then he dumbs me down. Let the good Lord drag us back to the gutter of his gun-cotton night. You will be like your dreams tonight, too. I discovered father's shotgun, dug it out from the earth like a tooth. There was one worm in particular, moving, the raw pink of it looked like the skin of my own mouth. I killed it with the stud of my bracelet, then entered the hall of the house like a son. Joe the Lion 2. Then the great machinery begins. The last time anybody saw you, the fawn walked into the field, night coming on like so many black wings. St. Francis, when he broke the wolf, leaned into the stinking sea of wine and blood that was that animal's body. I am the wolf. God is the night I must not creep into. Is this then the world? I ask for a ship, and no ship comes.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. My guest tonight has been the author, the poet, Cynthia Cruz. I did want to ask one last question, and it goes back to the image and the metaphor. The horse. Where did the horse come from? You know, what does that metaphor mean to you, or how do you think you used it in the book?
I think I'm not going to completely answer the question, but what I will say is when I was little, we moved a lot. I think we moved, turns out, like maybe on average 2-3 times a year, we moved a lot. And one time we moved, my dad said, you know, look, Cindy, if you get your, you know, if you just go through this move and not, you know, it not be a big deal, I'm going to buy you a horse. And he never did. So I think there's always this sort of like ghost horse that follows me around. So
sure.
Maybe that's what he's doing in the book.
Okay. Could you finish up with one last poem?
Sure.
Great.
5-Day Locker. Past the ruin of stables and rusted cages and daddy's seersucker and black leather, I wade into the black swamp and the river where all things weak break free. Jeweled pelt of girlhood, warm hominy and sweet milk, the mallow white billy goat tied by wire to the staff, then the Grand Duke in Daddy's silver Mack truck, and the blonde crawling the endless linoleum. What did they do to my brother while I was under the god of their gun? I laced my youth in medicine, glue and crystal methamphetamine. I would do anything to have died then with my brother in my arms.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the arts entertainment news weekly published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Joseph Wilk and Lauren Wolf, with special thanks this week to Daryl Jones and Electric Mayhem Studios in Chicago. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody on Independent Public Radio, 91.3 WYEP. She had a smile that swerved, she had a smile that curved, she had a smile that swerved all over. It's all wrong, all wrong, all wrong, all wrong. She had a way. Travel back in time, so the flips are switching. I collapse inside. It's all